the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak, Gregory Stockel, and Brian Lynn. Later, Katie Weaver and Anne Ball will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, a team of lawyers recently renewed calls for the International Criminal Court to open an investigation into the treatment of Uyghurs and others in China's Xinjiang area. The group presented an evidence report to the ICC. Activists and lawyers accuse China of crimes against humanity and genocide against Uyghurs and other ethnic minority groups. China's ruling Communist Party has denied all reports of human rights violations and genocide in Xinjiang. The filing is the latest attempt to have the International Court open an investigation into widespread claims of abuse against Uyghurs by Chinese officials. The legal team said it provided evidence that includes statements from a witness who escaped from an internment camp in 2018. The witness claims that he and others were tortured and forced to undergo medical treatments. One treatment included being injected with unknown substances. In recent years, China has carried out a severe crackdown on the Uyghurs, which it has described as a war on terror. The government's campaign has sent 1 million or more people to internment camps and prisons. The latest filing seeks to support the legal team's claim that ICC prosecutors have jurisdiction, even though China is not a member of the court. The lawyers argue that Uyghurs and others are being gathered on the territory of an ICC member state and sent to China. The court's judges previously ruled that the ICC has jurisdiction to investigate abuses against Myanmar's Rohingya minority group. Myanmar is also not a member of the court. But thousands of Rohingya were forced to flee to neighboring Bangladesh, which is an ICC member. British lawyer Rodney Dixon said evidence presented to the court's prosecutor's office uncovers a plan to round up Uyghurs in neighboring countries and elsewhere to force them back into China. The legal team said in a statement, "The ICC has jurisdiction over these crimes that commence on ICC territory and continue into China, and is urged to act immediately to open an investigation." The filing comes 1 year after lawyers first called on the ICC to open an investigation.
A powerful earthquake hit a rural, mountainous area of eastern Afghanistan early Wednesday. The state-run news agency said the quake killed at least 1,000 people and injured 1,500 more. Officials also warned that the number is expected to rise. It was the deadliest quake in Afghanistan for 20 years. In March 2002, a total of 1,100 were killed after the earthquakes in the Hindu Kush area. Wednesday's disaster is a major test for the Taliban-led government. The group seized power last year after the U.S. and NATO allies pulled out of the country. Rescuers arrived at the area by helicopter, but the rescue operation is likely to be difficult without international assistance. The Taliban's supreme leader, Haybatullah Akhundzada, rarely appears in public. On Wednesday, he called for the international community and all humanitarian organizations to help the Afghan people affected by this great tragedy and to spare no effort to help the affected people. Neighboring Pakistan's meteorological department said the quake's center was in Afghanistan's Paktika area. That is about 50 kilometers southwest of the city of Khost. Buildings were damaged in Khost, and tremors were felt about 375 kilometers away in the Pakistani capital of Islamabad. There is still little information on Wednesday's 6.1 magnitude quake, but quakes of that strength can cause serious damage in an area where homes and other buildings are poorly made. There are also landslides in the area. Images from Paktika showed men carrying people in blankets to helicopters. Others were treated on the ground. Some images showed people looking through bricks and stones from destroyed houses, many of which had collapsed roofs or walls. Robert Saunders is a scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey. He said an earthquake of that size would not create so much destruction in most places in the world. But a quake's damage often depends on geography, building quality, and population density. Because of the mountainous area, there are rock slides and landslides that we won't know about until later reporting. Older buildings are likely to crumble and fail, Saunders said. In Kabul, Prime Minister Mohammad Hassan Akhund organized an emergency meeting to plan a recovery effort. And a Taliban official added, "When such a big incident happens in any country, there is a need for help from other countries." A UN official in Afghanistan said that help is on its way, but that may be difficult. Many international aid groups had left the country following the U.S. exit because of concerns about security and the Taliban's poor human rights record. The Italian medical aid group, Emergency, still operates in Afghanistan. The organization said it sent 7 ambulances and workers to the areas closest to the earthquake. And Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif of neighboring Pakistan said his nation would provide help. I'm Dan Novak.
About 100 meters from the coast of Dakar, Senegal, are 8 sculptures rising from the ocean floor 5 meters below. The pieces of art are part of Oceania, an ocean diving center and environmental organization in the capital of the West African nation. Dutch and Italian artists Misha Saunders and Philippe Poetser created the sculptures while training in Dakar. VOA and other media were not able to visit the sculptures during a planned visit recently because of poor weather. The works were first shown at Dakar's art event, which ended this week. The goal is to bring more attention to the pollution that surrounds the sculptures in the hopes of creating a discussion about the environment. Charlotte Thomas is Oceanium's head of communications. Thomas said, "You see here in Senegal, the pollution is everywhere." She added, "You go into Dakar and you see waste all around you, and with the rainy season coming, it's going to go into the sea. So if we are not protecting our land, we cannot protect our sea." Besides Senegal's high plastic pollution, development projects over the last 10 years have greatly changed the coastline and hurt the easily damaged environment. Fish stocks have greatly dropped as commercial and local fishing boats continue to use unsustainable fishing methods. In 2015, the government passed a law banning single-use plastic, but it was never enforced. Since then, other similar laws have passed, but those never went into effect either. Senegal-born Rodwan El Ali, the diving director of Oceanium, oversees the underwater art project. El Ali said in French, "I live underwater, and I can see that the areas that were so beautiful when I was young, today not only are there no fish left, but they've been replaced by plastic bottles, cans, and all sorts of things. It's painful for me." El Ali said he used to see large ocean animals like dolphins, whales, and sharks. He said he also caught fish that were his size. "Now," he said, "there is hardly anything left." We're in a country where the environment is not a priority. He added, "Maybe politicians mention it in speeches, but in reality, they do nothing. No one is monitoring, no one is doing anything." I'm Gregory Stockel.
A report by a U.S. government research agency raises questions about the decentralized system of cryptocurrency technology. The report comes as major cryptocurrencies suffer large drops in value and several companies supporting the technology experience business difficulties. A cryptocurrency is a digital form of money that is not overseen by governments or banks. A network of computers records cryptocurrency activity between users. This activity is included in a ledger or list known as the blockchain. Because the blockchain involves a network of computers across the world, the system is considered decentralized. The blockchain was designed this way with the goal of preventing a single person or group from controlling the system. The new report on blockchain technology was recently published by the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA. The agency seeks to carry out research and development activities for the Department of Defense. The DARPA report was called "Are Blockchains Decentralized?" It was completed over the past year in cooperation with the U.S.-based computer security and research company Trail of Bits. The study centered on blockchains for the two most popular cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin and Ethereum. The researchers looked at the current level of decentralization with those systems and examined possible security risks. The report suggests these blockchain systems can be subject to unintended centralities that could result in security issues for cryptocurrency investors. Trail of Bits said in a statement, the research found that some people involved in the blockchain process can gain undue centralized control over the entire system. Such control can happen when individuals subvert the properties of current rules related to the blockchain's networking process. In addition, the company said that while the encryption system used in cryptocurrency activities is generally considered secure, it does not guarantee security. The term encrypt means to change information from one form to another in an effort to improve security and prevent attacks. Specifically, Trail of Bits said blockchain traffic involving Bitcoin is unencrypted. This means that any third party on the network route can observe and choose to drop any messages they wish. Examples of third parties include Internet Service Providers, or ISPs, Wi-Fi access point operators, or governments, the researchers said. DARPA said another issue discovered in the research was that 60% of all Bitcoin traffic moves through just three ISPs. The agency also found that 21% of Bitcoin computers were running an old version of the Bitcoin Core software that was known to have security vulnerabilities in June of 2021. The report also found that the number of parties needed to disrupt a blockchain is quite low, 4 for Bitcoin and 2 for Ethereum. The researchers said the risks identified in the report have been poorly described and are often ignored or even mocked by those seeking to cash in on the cryptocurrency business. The new report comes as Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies struggle to hold their value. Currently, Bitcoin is valued at around $20,000. It has lost more than 72% of its value since reaching a high of $68,991 on November 10, 2021. Last week, the chief executive of one of the largest crypto exchanges, Coinbase, announced the company would be letting go about 18% of its employees. Brian Armstrong also warned that a wider recession could make the industry's problems even worse. A recession could lead to another crypto winter and could last for an extended period, he said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Today, on our National Parks Journey, we explore the Everglades in South Florida. When many people think of Florida, images of sandy coasts, theme parks, and rocket launches come to mind. But it is also home to a natural wilderness different from any other in the United States. Everglades National Park is the largest subtropical wilderness in the U.S. Several rare and endangered species live in the park. It is a huge place, covering more than 600,000 hectares of wetlands. It is also a popular park. More than 1 million visitors pass through the official entrances every year. But others enter the park on water and go uncounted.
In 1947, President Harry Truman spoke at the official opening of Everglades National Park. He said the goal of creating the park was to protect forever a wild area that could never be replaced. The Everglades is considered one of the biological wonders of the world. It is a place where plants and animals from the Caribbean Sea share an ecosystem with native North American species. 9 different environments exist within the Everglades. They include mangrove and cypress swamps, estuaries, and coastal marshes.
In the 1940s, reporter and environmentalist Marjorie Stoneman Douglas wrote a book called The Everglades, River of Grass. She described the area as the liquid heart of Florida. Everglades National Park was created to protect an ecosystem from damage. The Everglades is home to about 30 species that federal officials say are threatened or endangered. They include the Florida panther, the American crocodile, and the West Indian manatee. More than 350 bird species and 300 species of fresh and saltwater fish live within the park. The Everglades is also home to 40 species of mammals and 50 reptile species.
Visitors to the Everglades will see many exotic plants. They include what is said to be the largest growth of mangrove trees in the Western world. Gumbo limbo trees, known for their peeling red skin. Strangler figs and royal palms are also among the area's plant life. The country's largest living mahogany tree also lives in the Everglades. Sawgrass grows in some areas of the park. Be careful. Sawgrass is very sharp, with teeth just like a saw. It can grow up to 4 meters tall. With about 1.5 meters of rainfall each year, plants and trees never stop growing in the Everglades. The dry winter season is the favorite of most visitors, when insects like mosquitoes are less of a problem. The rainy season lasts from June to November.
There are many ways to explore the Everglades. Visitors can see alligators while hiking the Anhinga Trail. The park is one of the only places in the world where freshwater alligators and saltwater crocodiles live in the same area. Visitors using canoes are likely to observe large groups of wading birds, like the wood stork or the great blue heron. Bright pink flamingos also thrive in the Everglades. Some visitors might enjoy riding bicycles through Shark Valley. Others might want to take it more slowly. The boardwalk walking trail goes right over the slow-moving water. Visitors can take a close look at insects and other wildlife. The park also offers tram rides for guided tours.
The National Park Service says that early colonial settlers and land developers believed the Everglades had little value. The settlers had plans to remove water from the area. In the 1880s, developers began digging canals to reduce water levels. At the time, they did not understand the complexity of the Everglades ecosystem. As a result, they were not prepared for all the work. They caused environmental problems. Larger efforts to drain the wetlands continued between 1905 and 1910. Farms were built on large pieces of land. More people began to move to the Everglades. More changes came mid-century. The federal government built roads, canals, and water control systems throughout South Florida. The project was aimed at providing water and flood protection for people and farms. Workers built a huge system of waterways and pumping stations to control the overflow of Lake Okeechobee north of the Everglades.
More recent years, environmental experts learned about the damage to the Everglades. Some experts say the balance of nature in the area has been destroyed. Today, some of South Florida's early wetland areas no longer exist. Populations of wading birds have been reduced by 90%. Whole populations of animals are in danger of disappearing. In 2000, Congress approved a plan to restore and improve the Everglades. Federal, state, and other organizations are partners in the Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Plan. The future is not clear for the wild and beautiful Everglades, but efforts are underway to protect this biological treasure. The hope is that people may continue to visit the extraordinary Everglades National Park long into the future. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Ann Ball.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.